This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about consumer law and your rights. This is our part two of our Consumer Law and Your Rights podcast, so please do listen to our part one. I'm here today with barrister Mr. Tim Sampson from Lamb Chambers in London. Tim is a senior barrister who is regularly instructed to deal with disputes in the High Court, and he also works on serious disputes in the County Court. Additionally, Tim lectures and writes on specialist areas of law, and he has taught on professional training courses run by the BPP University. Thank you for joining us, Tim.
Right.
Yes. So in part one, in our part one podcast, I just want to mention the four questions that we covered, which were: what is the Consumer Rights Act 2015 and how can it protect me? What are my consumer rights within 30 days up to 60 days? What is meant by statutory rights? And what is the Consumer Contracts Regulations Act 2013? So as we kick off this part two podcast, Tim, frequently asked questions we've had, the first one that's come in is lying to your customers illegal? We know it's immoral, but is it illegal even if the seller did not intend to mislead or deceive a buyer?
Right. It's actually a very interesting question. Although it's very short in nature, it actually raises an awful lot of issues. I'm going to have to be quite long about this because there's so many things to discuss. First up, a typical consumer contract, you have the right to have goods that are fit for the purpose and as described. Now, if there's just a mistake as to the description, say, you've got a right to send the goods back and have your money back. And to taint it with illegality may be a bit strong, misrepresentation. It's a contractual issue. And it doesn't matter if the seller got it wrong. If they're not in accordance with your consumer rights, you've got a right to refund on the goods, send them back. But of course, the question goes a lot further than the basic consumer rights. And this is where it becomes interesting. As we'll see later, looking at some of the questions we're going to be answering this morning, there are potential sins of omission here as well, not just commission.
Right.
So by that I mean, when you're engaged in what's called distance selling, so over the phone, over the internet, ordering from catalogues, there is a list of information set out in the regulations that you have to provide as the seller.
Even as an independent seller? I mean, are we talking about big retailers here, or are we talking about you, me, sticking something on, you know, eBay or something?
It's not limited to small people.
Right. eBay, individuals. It's not limited to individuals.
eBay's different because it's an auction site.
Right.
So we'll put auction sites
to one side. That's another conversation.
Auction law is fascinating in its own right, but okay, not for today.
Okay.
But if you are even a shop, just a single outlet shop, if you're selling online, you are obliged to provide the information in the regulation. And of course, if you don't have any physical presence, some of that can be very important. The consumer has to know not only who they're dealing with, but where they can get their hands on them if necessary, something goes wrong. Because, of course, over the internet, you've got no idea who, strictly speaking, you're dealing with.
No, you don't. Or where it's coming from, actually, where the goods are coming from.
And you're handing over credit card details and all the rest of it, so money becomes an issue. But we'll look at that as well. So that's what I'd call sins of omission, failure to do that which the regulations require. Is that lying to your client? Well, not really, but it's not doing what you should be doing either.
And it does become illegal.
And it does become illegal. And shops or enterprises that don't want to comply with those selling regulations you would have to be suspicious as to why. They don't think that supplying critical information as to their means of being able to contact them, the price of the goods, the cost of delivery.
The fundamental basic information. I mean, there is a case to say, I guess, or an argument to be made, they didn't know, but then, well, they should know, right? They're retailers.
If you're selling online, you really ought to familiarise yourself with the basic consumer rules concerning selling online. It would take you 2 minutes to discover them online.
The
government's quite good about publishing them.
Yes.
And I say, they're the sort of things that a reputable retailer would do as a matter of course anyway.
Yes,
so
yes.
Avoiding doing it should have the alarm bells ringing.
Absolutely.
But then we go into areas that become even more serious, potentially. And that is in relation to where you are getting deliberate fibbing going on.
Yes.
Now,
I like that.
Now, there are, even this is graded. There's a lot in the news recently about cannabis oil and the sale of cannabis oil.
CBD. Yes.
Now, the question, making health claims for products, which they are skirting around doing.
Yes. Well, I've actually seen adverts saying CBD are good for you for,
yes,
for example.
But making health claims and nutritional claims is very, very tightly regulated in Europe.
You say that though, Tim, but they're everywhere, these adverts, even with the vitamin world, which is a massive world, you know.
Yes, and I agree. And in particular, there's a lot of concern over foodstuffs that are said to be very good for diets, and you get people advertising them saying, I lost this amount of weight, that either have got to the point where the regulation says, no, you can't say these things because you're making claims that go beyond just advertising. You're making medicinal claims at this point, which are then very, very strictly regulated. But obviously the suppliers of CBD and a number of other nutritional products would say they want to get as close to making health claims as they can without actually having stepped on by the medicines agency.
So they're very cleverly put, aren't they? I mean, they're very cleverly worded in the way the products are marketed, like you say. So they don't enter the world of we're making a medical claim, but they're so close to that. And actually, the reader of what the consumer reading it does assume that it is a medical claim, really.
Yes.
Particularly with these CBD oil stuff.
And then you get the workaround, which is they don't make the claim on the product. They get an Instagram influencer
to
recommend the product,
yes,
making health claims for it, essentially by any other name.
But then aren't they liable for that person having made the claim? No, I guess, because that person's an individual saying, oh, look at this, I've experienced this with that.
Despite the fact, of course, they are supposed to disclose whether they are being paid by the product.
Are they really?
It's meant to be disclosed, as I understand how Instagram works, but, of course, there are workarounds on workarounds.
Yes.
And by the time anyone catches up with them, the products has already been pushed to their followers.
I mean, I'm probably going to sound really archaic for saying this, but technology is moving too quickly for the law.
Well,
that's what I feel like is happening.
Something you want to sell, you're going to find ways to sell it. And the regulations are seen as an inconvenience. You're going to think, well, what can I do to stay just the right side of the law?
Yes, particularly if you're a big brand and you've got the capacity in terms of staff to look into that, you've got the money to spend for the legal teams to tell you the routes, ways around and up and down, you know?
Yes, I mean, you could take another product that maybe people would be concerned about, alcohol. There are strict regulations. If it's low alcohol, it has to be below a certain percentage of alcohol. You can't have any claims for health benefits for alcohol, unsurprisingly.
Yes.
Although the rules...
wine's supposed to be very good for you, Tim. I mean, that's the hearsay.
Well, yes, but that's, you've now hit the nail on the head. There are these supposed health benefits of red wine, but you can't advertise it, red wine, saying, drink red wine for your health.
Yes.
But the people who produce wine and spirits are, of course, large, reputable firms for the most part, and they wouldn't be seeking to get around the regulations. They know what they are, and they just comply with them.
Yes.
But those are more easily regulated firms because they have brand reputation to consider as well.
Yes.
New entrants into the CBD oil market are a little bit keen to get the market share.
I mean, there's big posters. I've seen big posters, big billboards about CBD oil. All of a sudden, they're in shopping centres. There's little sort of
counters now in the middle of the art sort of walkways selling CBD oil.
But the regulations just haven't caught up with it yet.
Yes,
no doubt they will do, but at the moment it's a bit of a free for all.
Yes.
But you can see where there is now an issue about the consumer rights abutting regulatory rules. And obviously it's the consumer that misses out if the rules aren't complied with, because they buy things that are potentially either they're no good, you're spending money on things that are worthless, or you're buying things that are potentially dangerous, that aren't properly being regulated, because you buy them and say, well, I was told this was healthy, and it isn't.
Yes.
I mean, and obviously advertising has been more strictly regulated in the last few years than it had been, say, 50, 60 years ago. I've got at home a classic advertisement for a brand of cigarettes. I won't say which one. But it's astonishing the claims that are made in this advertisement that you would...
Relax.
Would have the regulators now falling off their chairs, including... a claim that this brand of cigarettes was smoked by more doctors in America than any other.
Well, I mean, you say that, but so many years ago, and I remember an old relative telling me that doctors used to prescribe cigarettes to their patients and say, listen, because they were prescribed a cigarette, have a packet of cigarettes, go and take some cigarettes, have one or two a day, it will help you relax. And I'm going back many decades, of course. But no.
But that was perfectly lawful, of course, at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
But now it looks extraordinary. So maybe 20 years from now, what we consider acceptable regulation of products
will look extraordinary.
Equally extraordinary.
Indeed.
But then there's just one final element we need to look at in terms of lying to your customers that is equally serious. Now, this is in relation to people like gas engineers. If you say you're a qualified gas engineer, you really do have to be a qualified gas engineer.
As
a service provider, it's strictly regulated, and if you're not, it's a criminal offence to do the work that you claim you're able to do. This, I'm afraid, the onus does start to come down onto consumers a bit as well. You do need to check the people that you are bringing into service your gas boiler, and that's just a classic example.
Yes.
If you're suspicious that they're not qualified, don't let them do the work.
I mean, absolutely.
Because that is just straight lying to the customer at this point.
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, or if they, I don't know if they have to probably, they renew their licences in course of time, if their licence have lapsed or something, you know. I mean, we rely on these people because we find them online in these safe sort of places that you think, oh, that's a safe website to find service businesses on, and they turn up in vans that have got stickers all over them of who they're regulated with, and then they've got the badge and no, I get it.
And of course, if you're a landlord,
oh goodness gracious,
then
you've got to provide
a gas certificate.
A gas safety certificate,
but
absolutely.
That can't be a valid safety certificate if the engineer wasn't qualified.
Absolutely.
So
it is up to you to check.
Yeah. We started this conversation about lying to your customers.
Yes.
This is at the lying end of it. And of course then there's the final one. The counterfeit goods end.
Oh, good God.
But if you buy a bottle of a well-known brand of perfume off a market stall in the East End of London for a fiver, you're being lied to, but you knew that as well.
Yes, yes.
Well, there are two options. If it's not counterfeit, it's probably stolen.
Yes.
So one way or the other, you're not really being lied to.
Yes. No.
But the counterfeiting goods, of course, are the more serious ones because not that I wish to say that selling stolen goods is a good idea, but the counterfeit goods tend to be the ones that are dangerous, counterfeit alcohol in particular.
Yes, there's been reports of people buying fake perfumes and coming into getting rashes. I mean, last year there was the vodka story of fake vodka, as in, you know, vodka being brewed up in a warehouse. It blew up the warehouse, I think, but somebody died actually from drinking fake alcohol.
Well, I have experience in court of dealing with people who are selling fake alcohol, and of course it is a real problem, because in the retail trade you would imagine that you'd be able to spot the counterfeits. But actually,
it can be difficult.
The counterfeits are so good sometimes that it's very, very hard to spot them.
Well, a very well-known brand of ladies' handbags, I won't name which one, but a very well-known brand of ladies' handbags had so many people coming in saying, we've been buying this handbag, this shape, and you don't make it. It's only made in the counterfeit world to look like one of yours. can you make it? And they actually started to make the handbag because they thought, this is a great design. We've had a lot of people coming requesting it, the real deal, and it doesn't exist. But no, I think that there's a huge area around counterfeit. I mean, I knew of a store that was selling a brand, labels, clothing, you know, high-end clothing. But what they were doing for years, and nobody actually become aware, I think, right until the end, obviously they were shut down, is they were incorporating a lot of fake items and selling them with the same price tag on the high street amongst this whole row of big labels. 50 to 60% of their goods were fake, and obviously they were making the huge profit margins. I mean, they got caught out and they got shut down, but that is illegal, and that's actually a criminal offence.
Well, yes, it's a criminal offence for the seller.
Yes.
Because, of course, if you apply a trademark knowing the goods are fake, then you are caught under the Trademark Act.
Yes. You'll be caught somewhere very, very quickly.
Trading standards will eventually find out what you're up to.
Indeed. Indeed.
But anyway.
Okay, we've got time for one more question, believe it or not. And I'm looking at our list and I'm thinking, good God. And the next question is buying in store versus buying online.
Yeah.
So are you protected any less when you buy online, any more when you buy online? Do you have stronger rights to return online or stronger rights to return in store? Does online laws have the same laws as buying in a store?
They're similar, but not the same, as lawyers would like to say.
Yes.
Buying in a shop, you're protected to a certain extent. You're more likely to have actually had the goods in your hand when you're purchasing them. You've seen what you're getting. You know who you're dealing with. You've paid the price to them there and then. The regulations that deal with distance selling are intended to get over some of the hurdles of dealing with someone you're not face-to-face with. This could include on the phone, internet, catalogue sales, also people coming to your house and offering you goods and services. That's not their place of work, therefore they're covered by the same regulations. But the thing you'll be interested in on goods you've purchased that are delivered to you are, what are your return rights? If you buy goods in a shop, you know where to go back to.
Yes, and have a discussion about it face to face.
This television does not work. Yes. I want my money back. Well, if it's not fit for purpose, and you go back in the first 30 days, you're just entitled to leave it there and say, I'll have my money. Now, what's the difference? How is the difference worked out for online sales that are delivered to your house, for example? Now, let's look at this step by step. I order the goods online, and the first thing is, well, I'm not going to have them in my hands immediately. So the law says, well, you've got a 14-day period, essentially a cooling-off period. Say, no, actually, I'm going to cancel the contract and send the goods
back.
So
no matter what you bought online,
apart
from music and downloads, we
touched on that. And there are certain other exceptions, in fact, to the right to cancel. It is a general right to cancel. I was just reminding myself earlier today of some of the categories that of goods that you can't return just on a whim of 14 days.
Because you've decided not to have them anymore.
If the goods are personalised to you, for example, you can't send them back. If it's maybe your specific instructions.
Name inscribed or somebody's name on them.
And, of course, the regulation also covers services. Now, your 14-day cooling off period, let's say you get your emergency plumber to come round and fix the roof or leak in the roof, you can't say, I'm now going to exercise my 14-day right to cancel this contract.
Yes, because the job's done and it can't be reversed.
Yeah, I can't. And so you've got some right not to pay for it on that basis. So that sort of service provided at short notice, the cooling off period disappears. And as we also touched on in the last podcast, if you want your digital download and you want it there and then, you waive your right
to cancel and give it back and say, I want my money back.
You don't lose all your rights if it's defective. It's simply you don't have that 14-day cooling off period.
To change
but
your mind.
Other things that people maybe are a little less clear about, that you lose or don't have the right to just a 14-day cancellation, are things like accommodation, so a hotel. You can't just say, I'm going to cancel now after 14 days.
After staying?
No, not after staying.
While booking, at the time of booking, we're staying.
Yeah, it, transport, vehicle rental service is another one that is covered by the... It's not within the general scope of the cancellation rules. So you shouldn't always assume that you can just cancel 14 days at a whim. So that's the cancellation right. But if, of course, if you do cancel, you can't just sit and hold on to the goods. You've got another 14 days to actually return them to the seller. And you shouldn't forget also that whilst you've got the consumer regulations that deal with the distance selling, you haven't lost your consumer rights. They're all there in place as well. This simply assists you in some ways in enforcing your rights that may be difficult to enforce if these regulations weren't in place.
Yes.
So you, it, they can't just send you defective goods.
No, no, or goods of course. That don't meet we're the talking about if you, I guess, if you change your mind and you say, right, yeah. I don't want these goods anymore. Mm. Where do you stand there? And I think it's very, very important that we discussed what you can't do that on, like we said, with the roof, with the music download that you wanted instantly, etc., etc. But people sometimes, you know, I still know sort of certain members of my family who say, well, I wouldn't do anything online because it's not safe and I lose all my rights if something goes wrong. I don't know where to go. But you don't lose all your rights, do you?
No. In fact...
From reputable places,
Places. And of course, they are obliged as part of the online world. Online, I'm using telephone distance selling generally.
Yes.
You don't not get your contractual rights. In fact, you should be given a durable copy of what you have agreed. And durable copy includes
emails. It's the small print, isn't it? That's what you... But there's so much of it.
It's what you would expect to get in forming a contract. So, again... Failure to provide that is a breach of the obligations under the regulations. And then, of course, there is the question of return. Now, if the contracting company has said they will come and collect it, all well and good, they can come and collect it. But if you have to return it, you have to pay for it. But you are entitled to your original delivery costs being reimbursed to you, just your standard delivery costs.
Right, right. So because obviously...
It's worth checking what the contract says about return policies.
Yes, yes, because they do change and they do vary from company to company. Yes. I mean, you know, I've had personal experiences in that regard. And it's worth reading the return policy because some people may say, well, you know, we won't give you a refund, but we'll give you a credit note and things like that. And that opens up another area, which are they allowed to do that? Are they not allowed to do that? That becomes a whole new...
Well, if the cancellation is within the 14-day period, they can't.
Yes, yes. And many people are not aware of that,
But there is a get-out on that, that the goods actually have to be returned in the state they were sent.
Yes.
So, for example, if you've taken clothing and obviously worn it... And
sort of taken the labels off...
And it's soiled or damaged in any way...
Yeah, absolutely.
You can still technically cancel the order, but... You're not entitled to all your money back.
Yes.
Because they are entitled, or the seller is entitled, to a reasonable reimbursement of the value that you've had out of those goods already.
Yes. No. Tim, we haven't even scratched the surface of the questions that we need to go to, but we've run out of time. So thank you so much for your time today. The last thing I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.